Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to American Statesman Blog Talk Radio, the place where it's all about duty, honor, and country, the place for American patriots to come together as one united people, come together to save our union. And tonight, today, Tuesday, June 11th, 2013, my name is Sally Baptist, and I thank you for tuning in to American Freedom Watch Radio. And our host is Karen Schoen and John Estabrook, and they will be joining us in just a second here. I got a couple of things to mention before I switch it over, and they have a special guest, John Casey, tonight. I apologize for not having the show last night. It was kind of a crazy day, and I just did not get to do the show last night. I will have the show on Thursday, and so I apologize for that. And then just one quick thing, as many of us have heard about NSA, once the NSA, listening to all of our phone calls, reading all of our emails, intercepting all of our private communications. And it saddens me that some Americans don't understand what the Fourth Amendment is about. And I don't hear anyone saying this one quote. So I wanted to just put one thing out there real quick, and then I'm going to switch this over. And I don't understand why no one is saying this. They who give up essential liberty to obtain a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. And this is Benjamin Franklin. There's two different versions. Those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. And that's what this is about. And I wish people would go back to what the founders said. The founders have told us all this stuff, everything that's happening today, the founders all told us about. We were all warned about it. There's truly nothing new that is happening here. And we need to be aware, and we need to understand what the Constitution is about and why it's so important. And myself, I signed up with Rand Paul for the 10 million people to oppose it, to take it to the Supreme Court, and I hope others will do that too. On that note, I am going to hand this over to Karen Schoen. Hey, Karen, how are you doing?
Hi there, Sally. How are you? And thank you all for joining us this evening. This is Karen Schoen with American Freedom Watch Radio, and we are brought to you live on Blog Talk Radio, American Statesman, and Red State Talk Radio.com. Please visit our radio sites and visit our websites, Agenda21Today.com, SaveAmericaFoundation.com. PanhandlePatriots.com and, excuse me, AmericaIsMyName.org. This is your host, Karen Schoen, and I'm John Estabrooks. And, John, you're in Florida today. How do you like that? John is usually in Louisiana, but today I believe he's in Florida. Are you there, John?
He must be traveling. He hasn't quite got online yet.
Hopefully he knows what time zone he was in. And that's okay. He did tell me that he might be a little bit late due to a trip. John is taking a boat from Louisiana and winding up in Sandestin, Florida. They're having a conference this weekend, so we will wait, and John can give us the energy update when he gets there. In the meantime, folks, we have had so many things happening in our country. And the most important, well, they're all very important. You don't even know where to start anymore, because we can watch our liberties and freedoms being eroded, or we can do something about it. And my choice, of course, is that we do something about it. Otherwise, we're not going to have a country much left. And we will have nothing, because communists, our enemy, again, who is our enemy? Our enemy are the communists. Although Glenn Beck had a wonderful word, and I thought that was really fantastic, because it seems to take in all of the ism people. And he calls them the controllers. And I thought that was a really neat word. So let's call them now the controllers. Well, part of the controllers are meeting in at a Bilderberg conference where they're going to decide your fate and my fate and the rest of the world because they know better than everybody else. And, of course, we're going to let them do that, aren't we? The other thing that we know is happening is this spy business. And those of us that have been following the government and things that the government is doing for a long time, we're not surprised. We know this is going on. In my imagination, I cannot imagine that any of the candidates in the last election that pulled out suddenly, like Herman Cain or Michelle Bachmann or Rick Santorum, any of them, I'm sure that something somewhere was said and some email was forwarded and some phone call was forwarded. But folks, this is not, really, really not just to get your phone number. This is so that the opposition can be snuffed out without a fight. Because somewhere in there, everybody has done something that you're not proud of. Everybody's made a mistake somehow. And putting those mistakes in the hands of people who want to do you harm will just escalate that type of behavior. And what we have right now are people who are drunk on power. They have in their hands a mechanism to control the conversation, to control the thought process of people, and by golly, they're going to do it. They are going to put that in place because they don't want opposition. That's a very interesting thing. Most people who are moral welcome the truth and welcome debating the truth because they feel proud that they know the truth. And they feel proud that they are able to put together their thought processes using the truth. The problem with people who are not moral, who rely on lies, find that one lie begets another lie, which begets another lie, which begets another lie, and this goes on and on and on. And I hope we are not naive enough to think that spying is just in the IRS. Because if we are, boy, we have a big shot coming for us. There is not one agency that I can think of that will not be doing, so if not already, and I would say already they are, some format of spying. Oh, Karen, how does that work? You got to be crazy. That's not going to happen. The EPA is not going to spy on us. How would they do that? Well, just think. Smart meters, smart grids, any type of restrictive measure through regulation, this is a form of spying because the minute you put a smart meter, and by the way, folks, smart meters, I just discovered, are being put on private wells because this regime of controllers feel that you don't own the water that's on your property. That water belongs to everybody. And if the water belongs to everybody, well, then they can put a meter on it and charge you for it. They can put a little black box on your car because those roads, they belong to everybody. Remember what Obama said? You didn't make that. The government did. But if you're going to use it, you're going to pay for it. Did they forget we already paid for it? What were our taxes for? This is a form of double taxation for the use of goods and services that the controllers feel should be shared by everyone and controlled by them. And they are putting in place the mechanisms to do that. The IRS, to me, was just the tip of the iceberg because the rest of it, the rest of the onion will be unfolding as time moves forward. But the problem is not just the spying. I was more upset by the mindset of the people who felt that spying was okay and that they were happy, like Sally said, to give up some of those freedoms for security. Well, let's look at that and analyze that for a minute and see how that really worked. I know they captured the Boston bombers because we had all that security. Did they capture them? Did they know about them? Well, we now find out that they knew about them, but they never captured them. So what was the actual purpose of all of that spy equipment and spy material if it was not used and was not used to capture the bombers? The purpose of the spy material is to collect data from American citizens to be used when an American is in opposition to the government. And that's the form of control that spying offers. You have a private conversation. You have no right to think that's private. After all, you might be using somebody's airwaves, somebody's server, somebody's anything. Why would you think that your information should be private? Well, we have a constitution that says that our government has no business in our private business, that our private business belongs to us. And unlike other countries where there is no expectation of privacy, in America we have an expectation of privacy. And one of the things that I used to teach and tell my kids when I was teaching, for the sake of one person doing something wrong, should all citizens be held at risk? Think about that. One person, in that case the Boston bombing, two people that were never even found, and they knew about them in the beginning, they never went to find them until the end. You know, we all saw that unfold. But if they had all this massive spying information, then why wasn't it used properly? Well, there's only one answer to that. They didn't want to. And this is the part that we have to face as a people. We have a regime in office right now that has such a disdain for the American people and for the ideals and the passion and the desire for freedom and liberty of the American people, that is so distasteful to them that they will resort to spying, and then it becomes a spy fest of neighbor against neighbor, family against family, and this, we go back to the root of all the problems, is being taught in school. Over this past weekend, we had a lot of storms in Florida, and we took a little bit of Sunday off because we really couldn't do very much. The Florida storms, Florida happens to be the lightning capital of the world, we're so lucky. It's really beautiful to watch, but sometimes the damage is horrific. But anyhow, during this day when we had to shut down all of our electricity, we looked for some CDs or DVDs that we could watch, and we found two old movies. And I have to tell you, it was an eye-opener. We saw Mrs. Miniver, and this was a movie with Walter Pidgeon and Greer Garson, and it was done in 1994. And the other one that we saw was Mortal Storm, and that was Jimmy Stewart and Margaret Sullivan, and that was from 1940. These are the movies that I saw, I used to watch when I was a child growing up, and they were movies that showed Europe in between World War I and World War II. The propaganda was coming to America. People were being shown a facade of Germany, a facade of Hitler's actions. When people would go visit Europe, when they would go visit the cities in Germany, they would only walk or be involved in a few blocks and never see what was really going on. And at this time, Hollywood was actually trying to do good, and they were trying to get a message to America that things are not as they appear. What happened to Hollywood now? Well, we know they've been taken over. But through these movies, the people were able to see and understand what Hitler was doing. And the things that stuck out and hit me in the face was that the first group that Hitler went after were the children. And his sights were on the teachers and the professors. And these were the first group of people that fled Europe because of Hitler's persecution. Now, when they fled Europe, where did they go? A large portion of them came to America. And when they came to America, they did not bring the message of individualism and liberty and freedom. They brought the message of socialism, because that's what they were teaching. What they were not teaching was communism, but what they did believe in was a lot of socialism. And they brought that information with them here. And they began in the 40s to get into our universities and our school programs, and they began the transformation of America through our youth. Now, at the end of the war, we had the baby boomers because so many children were being born. And by the 50s, this was my generation, we were in school. Who was educating us? Where were these educational programs coming from? Many of them were programs that were brought over from Europe into America as the teachers fled Europe and got jobs in the universities. And this is why our universities today are of such a liberal nature, or progressive or communist or controlling nature, because it's the people from Europe who came here to create what they left in Europe, which that was something I could never figure out, because if you were leaving something bad, why would you want to come to a new place and recreate what you just left? That to me never made sense. However, these people landed here and they became our educators. And now we are left with the mess of what they have created. And that is a big, big problem that we are having today, because the truth is being squashed exactly like it was when the Europeans were in Europe. Squashing the truth through fear is one of the things that Saul Alinsky teaches in Rules for Radicals, which is the Bible of this crowd. What does that mean? That means that when you are on the opposition to the regime, to the controllers, and you begin to speak out, you become the target of demonization, marginalizing you, making you into some kooky nut, making people think that you are irrelevant, don't know what you're talking about. And the interesting thing is that facts are no longer important. This group does not deal in the real anything. They don't deal in the real world. They have created their own format of reality. And I believe a lot of it has to do with drugs, because many of the Europeans who came here were already addicts by the time they came here. Much of the writing of the people of that time, people were addicts. They were heroin addicts. They were on drugs. They weren't all together with all of their faculties. And that filtered up right into school. And it became a process of acceptance So accepting the fact that somebody was a drug abuser became the norm. It became okay. It became an okay thing to do. And that is really what started the downfall of America. Because once you accept things that are not moral as the new normal, which is what we are continually told, we must be working with the new normal, whatever that means, is the normal of the minute, the normal of the day. I want to change your thinking. I will create a new normal and tell you that it is okay to do things that under other circumstances you would never even consider doing. But the new normal is what was then acceptable in school. And when my generation, when we left high school, which was in the mid-60s, we were faced with a decision. Many of the young men were going to have to go to Vietnam, or they would flee the country. Well, the controllers realized that in the 60s, they had a group of people that were unhappy. Actually, we were miserable. We just lost Kennedy. We had lost Martin Luther King. We lost Robert Kennedy. We were losing the good guys right and left. And that anger and hostility was corralled by the controllers into the model of teaching. So they took my generation and said, don't want to go to Vietnam, don't want to get involved in the draft, don't want to have part of the draft. What we'll do is if you teach, you will have a draft exemption. So all of the people, the Jane Fondas, the America haters, the communist sympathizers, the people who were looking for that better way, peace, love, drugs, everything, whatever went, whatever you wanted to do was acceptable. It was okay. It was okay to do. And that's the mentality that went in our schools. And that was when, in the 60s, is when our schools really started changing. And they changed dramatically because truth was no longer important. It was the value. And, of course, the question is always, whose value, what value, and what are we studying? But what was happening to the kids is that they were being taught that nothing is real. Everything is how you feel about it. If you feel good about it, then it's an okay thing to do. And that was being passed on generation to generation to generation. And now we have the third generation of kids that have gone through 12 years of school and for the most part have learned nothing. And what's happening now through Common Core, which is not a new thing, Common Core has been around for a long time, just had a different name. It was called, in the 80s, it was called Goals 2000, and then it got moved up to Millennium Goals, and then it became Sustainable America, and then it became No Child Left Behind, and now today the same program is called Common Core. But what Common Core does, it incorporates the idea that facts and truths are not important, that value is more important, that there is no being, there is no God, there is no morality, because anything that you want to do is okay to do. Now, we are taught that freedom and liberty are of utmost importance, and I can be free, and I can be free to do whatever I want to do, but it's the morality of liberty that will stop me from doing something to harm someone else, because I know it's not right. If I steal something from you, that is not right. And yet, this is exactly what our government is doing. They are teaching that theft is okay, that speaking, that lying is fine, because according to them, the ends justify the means, and that is the most important thing. So where is all of this leading to right now? What are we doing? We are listening to our legislators lie. We can see them lying. We can hear them lying. But yet, there's one important piece that's missing, and that is people. Yes, we're watching television. Yes, we're listening to them lie. Yes, but what are we doing about it? Where is the outrage from the American people? Now, again, we go back to school, because what are the kids taught in school today? They're taught that whatever the government says is okay. So it's okay for the government to spy on you. It's okay for the government to choose your job. It's okay for the government to tell you what to do. It's okay for the government to dole out to you what few minuscule pieces of whatever it is that they want to give you to have. It is okay for the government to control your consumption. It's okay for the government to control your movement. I just received an email from someone in Bosnia, and he was relaying the same kind of information being taught in their schools. But only many of the European countries are one step further removed than we are, because this has been entrenched in their lives for a much longer period of time. If they want to move, they have to get the permission from the government. If they want to travel someplace, they have to get a pass from the government. If they want a particular kind of food, they have to have it okayed by the government. If they want to change their job, they have to have it okayed by the government. Do you understand where this is going? Because this is exactly where we are going. And the silence is what will destroy America, not the people that are doing damage, because we the people, Americans, not each and every individual one of us, has the ability to do something about it. And yet we don't, because we have been trained that the government is right and we must accept whatever the government says and does. And this is the situation we find ourselves in right now. I was watching the hearings on immigration, and the most interesting thing, aside from the lying that I heard, was the elimination of the word illegal. What is this immigration bill about? Well, according to Marco Rubio, depending upon what audience you're sitting in, because he speaks out of both sides of his mouth, the border, closing the border, is the most important thing. Let me tell you, folks, if the border was closed, we wouldn't need surveillance. There would be no need for surveillance, because the right people would be followed. The people who might do the damage would be followed and observed. In the meantime, when he speaks to his English audience, he tells them that the border must be secure, and that's the most important thing ever coming out of this bill. And when he speaks to his Spanish audience, he tells them that their pathway to becoming a citizen is the most important thing. Now, why did I use that as an example? Because here is an example of a person who is telling a lie. One of them is a lie. I don't know which one he thinks it is, but one of those sentences is a lie, and yet it becomes accepted. And why does it become accepted? Because Americans have been trained to accept. And some of the things that we are accepting are very, very harmful. One of those harmful things that we're accepting is what's going on with our climate. Because remember, our climate dictates a lot of what we do. If it's hot, we'll do one thing. If it's cold, we will do something else. If we don't know, what do we do? That leaves us at a disadvantage. Now, the people, the controllers, would have us believe that it is going to get warm and the oceans are going to rise 4 to 20 feet, and Florida and the whole East Coast is going to be wiped off the map as the oceans rise. Well, we're going to have John Casey on, and he's going to talk about that. But the spin on what they were saying was, even though it was found out, factual data proving that, A, it is getting colder, not warmer, and B, as we all know, when the water gets colder, ice does not melt. Ice is not going to melt in cold water. Ice will melt in warm water. Ice will not melt in cold water. But the stake and the spin that you are left to walk away with was, oh, thank goodness, we caught a breathing space. And yes, it has not been getting warmer, but we have to prepare because it's going to get warmer. Again, another tool to mislead the people, because the controllers need to have that control. They need to have the control over us on a continual basis. And the only way they can do that is to pump us up with a whole bunch of lies. So the agencies now are spying on us. Every single agency is spying on us. Every agency has built-in things. Is John there?
Yeah, let me open the line up for him right now. Just got
oh,
hey, John.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are very proud to have John Casey with us tonight. And John is my guru scientist right now. I'm not talking to because he told me it's going to get cold. And I'm a warm body, and I moved to Florida because it was supposed to be warm, and I wanted to spend the rest of my life in warm climate, and now John is telling me that it's not going to be that way. Right, John?
That's right.
So I don't know, John. Do I have to? Oh, my gosh. I won't even be able to wear my fur coat. I guess that would be off limits, too. I might be mistaken.
Well, there will be times when you'll need to dress more warmly than now, that's for sure.
So, John, how are you, first of all?
Doing just fine, thank you. Had a very busy week here at the Space and Science Research Corporation, where me and three other aides and a couple scientists put together the most recent quarterly global climate status report, which went out yesterday.
Yes, I know, and we sent that out, and folks, you must visit John's website, spaceandscience.net, and take that press release, which John will explain, and make sure you put it in the hands of your legislators, because they are not paying attention. And we have a few, like Senator Inhofe, who gets it, but he needs help because right now he's the lone wolf. We need to get him some help because what John's information is goes right along with his book. So, John, why don't you tell everyone what you have just discovered and where we're headed? But before you do that, I just wanted to ask you if you read the New York Times article explaining how lucky we are. It has nothing to do with scientific evidence, but we're really lucky that the last 17 years it didn't get warm.
Well, if you're referring to the recent article by Justin Gillis in the New York Times titled What to Make of Global Warming, I didn't know that. I came in after you were talking about that, apparently. Not only am I well aware of that article, but Dr. Rich Swire at watchdogwire.com has posted my detailed 3-page response to that article. So very familiar with it.
Oh, that is wonderful. Well, why don't you share with us your response, and then we'll make sure that everybody gets that. And make sure that they take it over to their legislators, especially, folks, your state legislators. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But, John, what did you tell Justin?
Well, first of all, your listeners are probably already aware that the New York Times has set up a long multi-year tradition of deceiving the public about what's really happening with the climate and what causes climate change. The problem they're having now, and all in the warmest community are having, is that all of these global climate models that have supposedly told us we're going to be overheating and all the glaciers will melt and by 2100 all the major cities will be underwater, has all been a fraud. It simply has been a fraud from the word go, and all these global climate models have failed utterly to predict climate change since they first came out. The New York Times article by Justin Gillis that came out yesterday was merely more of the same in a very meager attempt to counter the obvious facts, among which are that for 16 years there's been no growth in the Earth's average temperature. Furthermore, what Gillis fails to talk about is the fact that the Earth's atmosphere and the Earth's oceans are in fact cooling, not just staying at a plateau, as he alleges in his article. And of course, he goes on to talk about many other phony assertions by the warmest community that even if in fact we are at a plateau, don't worry, it'll get warmer later. So there's a lot to the article that is simply not true.
Well, what was it Ronald Reagan said? The problem with our liberal friends is that they know so much of things that are not true.
Well, certainly apropos in this particular article, no question. But I did spend a lot of time on it. I got quite angry when I read it, so I spent a good part of this morning writing a response to it, which fortunately WatchdogWire.com has now posted. So it's there for all to read, and I counter all the assertions that he makes in his article, of course.
Well, one of the biggest assertions that I have noticed in all of these climate, quote, climate models is the lack of understanding, it seems, as what evaporation is. And they very rarely talk about cloud cover, the importance of cloud cover, and the cooling of the Earth because of cloud cover. So they seem to have eliminated that in their model. So, you know, it's kind of like, oh, well, if the sun is going to shine for 365 days a year without cloud cover, then it'll get hot. But the other side is they're certainly not even talking about the sun. And the saddest thing, John, is when I talk to a group of kids and I ask them, what is the single biggest factor in our solar system, in our universe that controls our climate, and they have no idea, and these are kids that are in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade.
Very sad what's happened in our educational system, and it's going to get worse with the Common Core and the new science, next generation science standards that have come out. I've looked at those as well, and it's more of the same. You would have thought Justin Gillis from the New York Times wrote them. They're all about man-made global warming and how mankind controls climate change on our planet. So very sad situation we're in.
Let's make it straight for all the kids, all the listeners. When I used to teach, I used to tell my kids to take a piece of string, and we would do that, and put it around the circumference of the globe, which is the equator. And then I would take a pin and hold it on the piece of string after we stretched it out, and I would tell them that that is about the amount of influence that man has in dictating what the climate is going to be. So let's
very
put
good.
It in perspective, folks.
Yep. Well, of course, mankind and his generation of greenhouse gases, and in particular CO2 from industrial activity, has really little or nothing to do with climate change on the planet, even though that's what we've been told for 20 years by the United Nations and by various political leaders here in the U.S. It's simply not true.
Well, John made an amazing discovery, and one of the most wonderful things that experiences that we had was when we had a conference, and we had John and another scientist who never met each other, and we just asked them each to come out and talk about what their scientific discoveries were about the climate. And David studied the ice, and John studied the sun. And I believe you were exactly at the same spot within maybe a year.
Exactly. That's such a good example. If scientists are left to do pure science research and come to and develop their findings and come to proper conclusions without the weight of politics on them, then it doesn't matter what perspective they come from, they end up with the same answer with regard to the climate, which is that natural cycles, and in particular control the climate. And in David Dilley's case, the meteorologist you're referring to, his study of ice cores showed what my study of solar cycles did, that not only does the sun control the climate, but now climate is changing from the past warming period to a new and potentially dangerous cold era, where 200-year-old records for cold weather will be broken, and that will occur very soon. And yes, David and I came up with predictions, totally different approaches, and we were about a year apart on when the bottom of this new cold era would be.
See, that's what people don't understand. That's the value of the truth. There's only one truth. And no matter how you approach it, there may be many ways. You know, there's many, many paths to get to your destination. But there's only one destination you can get to. And when it's the truth, it doesn't matter what path you take, you're always going to wind up in the same place with the truth. Unlike climate models coming from the UN, which are created by consensus, and that means that the answer is given first, and the models are then created on a computer. So I guess it's safe to say that the only place that man has any influence on the climate is on a computer model.
Exactly right. And if you go back and look at the many, many climate models, up to 78 different climate models that now exist to predict what's going to happen with our future, they're all wrong. None of them actually come out and accurately portray what has happened in the last 15 or 20 years with our climate. And that is with the full advantage of what happened before. One would think that if you study past history, you have a pretty good idea of what the future will be. But all of the climate models with that knowledge behind them still fail utterly by a wide margin to predict what's happened with our climate in just the last 10 years. Certainly,
they
missed the new cold climate completely.
Yeah, do you think that it's because they don't go back far enough and do an accurate comparison that way? Because I know with anything, if you go back and you measure 5 or 6 or 10 years ago, that's like spit in the wind. That doesn't mean anything in the actual data models of our planet. I mean, what's a couple of years out of the millions of years that this has been going on?
Exactly.
Climate changes are not a new thing, folks. It doesn't happen at a whim. It doesn't work that way. But do you think it's because they don't go back and make comparison data models?
That's correct. And in fact, what they routinely do is not go far beyond the 40s, 1940s, with their projections. They start back then, and then they try to force fit them into something that tells us what the future is going to be like, when in fact the cycle that is now reversing the Earth's warming phase to a much colder phase is a 206-year-long cycle. If you only go back a few decades, then you're going to miss the cycle completely. It's the old story of not seeing the forest for the trees. When you're looking only at a near-term time frame to make your model projections off of, then you're literally confused by what's the bigger picture around you. And that's one of their problems. They have a very narrow time frame, and that effectively puts blinders on them when it comes to looking forward.
John, as we have said, it is the sun that controls our climate. Can you tell the people what you discovered and how you are able to make these predictions using the sun?
Back in April of 2007, while I was working on a completely unrelated book, I was in the process of examining solar behavior, in other words, how the sun is producing various signals via sunspots, via radio waves, via magnetic field strength, and other factors regarding solar behavior, and in the process detected a family of small cycles from 200 years down to about 9 years that actually control the climate and control it so specifically that even in a one or two human lifetime span, we could actually see these cycles at play. We could actually observe the cooling and the warming effects of these various cycles. From that, I developed my relational cycle theory. In other words, we could actually relate to these cycles of the sun during our lifetime and use that to predict the next climate change. Curiously and coincidentally, I announced my research in May of 2007, and the cycle changeover was for that year, 2008 or 2009, by my calculations. And it actually changed over in 2008. I held a news conference, a TV news conference, on the 1st of July, 2008, and announced that global warming had in fact ended and that a new cold climate had begun.
And then what happened when you told the administration?
Well, both the outgoing Bush administration, which had no time to look at my data at that point, and the new Obama administration, I received absolutely no response. So they effectively ignored what I was saying, as did the mainstream media, as did the established scientific community. And quite honestly, I couldn't blame them back then because I was a new guy. I came from the space program, not the climate or environmental fields. I did not have a PhD. I had no laundry list of scientific research papers behind me. So they properly looked at me as someone without credibility in the field of climate science. But over time, of course, all of my major predictions have come to pass. It is a record that even today is unmatched by all the climate scientists at NOAA and the EPA and NASA, and certainly all those at the UN.
So what is actually happening to the sun right now that is the phase that we're going to be going into?
The sun has, in fact, entered a period which I call a solar hibernation. Solar physicists call it a grand minimum, but I think it's better to understand if you call it a solar hibernation. Sun actually cuts back on the amount of energy it delivers to the Earth every day that keeps us as warm as we have been. When it cuts back on that energy, the Earth gets less warm, and in fact, in the next few years, we'll begin to see real cold records being broken on a regular basis. And by the bottom of this cold cycle, around 2031, we'll have broken 200-year cold weather records. And unfortunately, along the way, especially in the 2020s, we'll start to see massive crop damage globally, creating social upheaval, starvation, and very difficult times for us, quite honestly, just as it did the last time this 206-year cold weather cycle hit.
That's right. And if people go and look in the history books and see what happened at the end of the 1800s, what are the pictures that you see in Europe? I was just talking, John, about a movie that I was watching in the 1940s, and it was showing the ice and cold, talking about the ice and cold before. And folks, this is to me probably one of the most serious issues that we ever would address, because this is an egregious hoax. But, John, unfortunately, knowing Agenda 21, it fits right in with their model, which is they see humans as the plague destroying the planet. So if a few humans die, they could care less. And I think that that's why they are directing us into this warm model, because they know what will inevitably happen, and it will help them with their cause to depopulate the planet. I can't figure out why else anybody in government would guide their people in totally the wrong direction, knowing the truth. I can't believe that they all believe this. It just doesn't make sense.
Well, certainly if you look at the history of how the UN started its global climate panel and the reports they've been putting out since 1988, I have to echo some of your sentiments. I couldn't believe it when I read the public statements of Maurice Strong, who began the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. He was the guy at the UN that started all this. And even he has said publicly that it should be the goal of every person, every leader, to deindustrialize the entire globe. Now, what he means by that is literally shutting down industry. And, of course, that would not only take us back to the Stone Age, but it would cause the deaths of a large percentage of the population on Earth. Now, this is coming directly from the mouth of the guy that started this whole program of climate change and greenhouse gases at the UN. It's really amazing when you go back and research who started all this, why they said they were going to start it, and what their objectives were. Of course, here in the U.S., the most vocal supporter of this has been former Vice President Al Gore, who came within a hair's breadth of being our president. But, of course, it wouldn't have been much difference, I don't believe, between he and President Obama in their aggressive pursuit of policies that will, as I say, tax us to the max, because of their desire to impose a socialist form of government here in the U.S. and using man-made global warming as the tool to do so.
That is a built-in restriction, restrictive policy, because if everything that we do is restricted because the Earth is going to get warmer, then we wind up stopping doing a lot of things that are necessary to make sure, to ensure that of our survival when everything gets a lot colder. So it fits exactly with what this crowd was saying. Maurice Strong, he is the gentleman that said that in order to save the planet, he must destroy capitalism. So look at the policies that we have going on in America today. They are all slanted at destruction. And what are they destroying? Just as John said, the industrial society, because they, in order for them to be successful, they have to find an enemy that everybody can hate altogether. So it became the world polluters who were then, as they said, causing the temperature rise, which will cause the seas to rise water 20 feet. And these same people, we have to look past what they say to what their actions are and what they benefit from, because this is all about money, power, and control. It has nothing to do with humanity and making sure there's no poverty and that the world people are not hungry, because if they did, we would be on a much different course right now, instead of shutting down coal plants, instead of shutting down fossil fuel, instead of not building refineries, the cheapest and easiest way to keep us warm and to keep us constantly growing and producing and productive, they're shutting down. And think about this, folks. In a blizzard, what are solar panels going to do for us? That's a what do you do with a windmill in the middle of a snowstorm?
I'm glad you brought that up, because if you look at what the Europeans are doing, they painted themselves into an energy corner by shutting off nuclear plants, by shutting off coal-fired plants, and going to wind and solar. Wind and solar in no way can make up for the huge energy budget that Europe requires, and certainly the future U.S. requires, to maintain our current standard of living. There's just no way you can physically get there from here. Even if you converted every energy supply to wind or solar or what have you, we just don't have the time or the money to get us to the energy level to take care of us in this new cold era, for sure. And as I mentioned about Europe, they've really put themselves in harm's way now by doing whatever they could to go to these renewable energy sources, which simply cannot cut the grid. And I will tell you, having spent 10 years in Germany, both as a child and as an army officer later, Germany's pretty much clouded up in coal much of the year, and solar panels are just not going to cut it over there.
You know, you're right. And think about England, folks. What were the things that we always learned about England? It was always damp and cold and nasty and cloudy, and how do solar panels work there? They're not going to work there either. And windmills. I mean, let's take a look at windmills. Holland had windmills for years and years and years and years and years. And if windmills were so wonderful, then why didn't that expand into a huge industry based on Holland's windmills? Because they're not efficient. And you can't turn a windmill in a tornado. Nothing. What's going to happen with a windmill in a hurricane? We had 60-mile-an-hour winds just on a tropical storm. What are you going to do in 100-mile-an-hour winds when you have these windmills sticking up in the middle of your field? Are they going to help you keep warm? I don't think so. And this is a very, very, very serious thing that we have to be looking at. What else do you think we'll be experiencing, John, other than just cold?
Well, if you look at the history again, we find that during these cold eras, we have our largest earthquakes and our largest volcanic eruptions. It's quite surprising how the Earth reacts to these solar hibernations, but that is the record. That is what we see when we go back and we pair up these deep cold eras. We also find our biggest earthquakes and biggest volcanoes. Let me give you a couple examples. The last time we had the 206-year solar hibernation occurring was from 1793 to 1830. It was called the Dalton Minimum. But basically, if you go back, you find out that the largest ever series of earthquakes on the entire planet took place right here in the U.S. at the bottom of the last cold cycle. And no, it wasn't in California. It was right south of St. Louis, in what's called a New Madrid Fault. That period of time, from 1811 to 1812, at the bottom of the last cold cycle, we had 3 8.0 earthquakes occurring within a few months of each other. Very devastating. Fortunately, at that time, you had very little human activity in that area. You had some Native American tribes and a few trappers and hunters. But bear in mind, the U.S. as a country was very young then. We only had 5 million population back then. We've got three times that in Florida alone right now. So there wasn't a lot of building damage or loss of life even south of what was St. Louis back then. But if it struck again today or during this next cold cycle, you can imagine the damage would be horrific in terms of loss of life and infrastructure damage. Also at the same time, we had the largest ever recorded volcanic eruption of Mount Tambora in Indonesia in 1815.
Okay, I'm going to play devil advocate here. Oh, that just went off in the southern hemisphere. That's not going to affect us up here in the north. Folks, do you remember what happened in Ireland? You remember all over Europe after the volcano went off in Iceland, rather. Remember what went on and how planes were grounded, how fields were destroyed from volcanic ash. Think about what could happen to the population and to the Earth's surface if a huge volcano like that goes off. Hey, what could be? That is one of the biggest ones, isn't it?
Exactly. And if you look at what you're talking about, back in 2010, an Iceland earthquake shut down air traffic for at least 3 months. Anyone flying to Europe couldn't go because of the dust particles that were in the air and how they would shut down aircraft engines if an aircraft flew through them. Unfortunately. I'm sorry?
Think of the crops. What happens to the crops that are being planted? That would be devastating when that ash falls. Those crops will be useless.
Now, that's a very good example. If you look at the 1815 Mount Tambora explosion, we need to put that in perspective. Mount St. Helens, that most people are aware of from 1980, April 18th, I believe it was, when that exploded, it was devastating to that local community up there and put huge clouds of ash that covered sections of states east of them, or east of Mount St. Helens, very devastating in the local area. But imagine the Mount Krakatoa that exploded in 1883 was much, much larger than Mount St. Helens, and Mount Tambora was much, much larger than even Krakatoa, and it was so large, in fact, that it did affect crops and temperature worldwide. Here in the U.S., 1 year after that explosion, we had 1816, which was called a year without a summer. So much of that dust from that volcano affected the weather in the U.S. that we lost most of the crops that were planted for a year in the U.S., and it just devastated the country's economy. Even Thomas Jefferson had to take out a loan because he lost all his crops from the cold weather back then. We had not only very cold weather during the bottom of this last solar hibernation, but we had extremes of weather. In June of 1816, we had 90-degree temperatures in New England, and just 2 months later, we had snow and ice in the middle of August.
Oh, my goodness, think about that. I noticed that in Russia in June, it was snowing. How many weather stations reported that? June snowing in Russia. Now, I know it's cold in Siberia, but I also know that they have a summer, and it may not be as warm as our summer, but it certainly is a summer, and it's not supposed to snow in June any place in the Northern Hemisphere. So things are beginning to happen. John, why does the cooling cause earthquakes and volcanoes?
I wish that we had a lot of those billions of dollars that was thrown away studying man's effects on the climate so we could put them into answering just that kind of question. The answer is we don't really know yet. It's going to take a lot of time and research to go find out. One of the theories is that as the sun goes through the 200-year warming cycle, it heats up the Earth's mantle, causes it to move faster, so it naturally would reach a peak where it produces more earthquakes and volcanic eruptions. Another theory is that once the sun goes through the change and starts to cool the mantle abruptly, that also has an effect. So we don't really know yet, but we do know with some certainty that these major earthquakes and volcanoes do occur at the very bottom of these cold solar hibernation cycles.
Well, the thing that, what should we be looking at? What should we be doing? First of all, John, I did you a disservice. Please tell everyone who you are. I am so sorry. Tell everyone about your book and your website.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, I am an author of the climate science book called Cold Sun. I have since May of 2007, been leading the effort here in the United States to alert our leaders and our people that we are, in fact, facing a potentially dangerous new cold era, that global warming has ended, and we need to start recognizing that. I'm a former White House space science advisor, shuttle engineer, consultant to NASA headquarters. I am also the editor of the Global Climate Status Report, which is the only regularly published independent climate report in the U.S. To read any other kind of climate report, you pretty much have to listen to what the government tells you in their annual climate reports. But, of course, I don't put a lot of stock in those reports anymore.
Well, they are kind of, as we said, generated through consensus, because some scientist someplace is getting a grant to prove that man is in control of the weather. And when that happens, folks, the only climate model that will prove that man can control the weather, as I said before, is on a computer. But before we go any further, let me announce that you are listening to American Freedom Watch Radio. This is your host, Karen Schoen. We are brought to you live on blogtalkradio.com, American Statesman, and on redstatetalkradio.com. Please visit our websites, agenda21today.com, SaveAmericaFoundation.com, PanhandlePatriots.com, and make sure you visit John's website, spaceandscience.net, because you will find this and other important information that you will be able to share with your legislators. I actually, John, made an appointment with my legislator today when I got your email of the new press release. And I told him I was coming over when he got back from D.C. to drop off some very important information. Only this time I'm going to do things a little differently. I'm not going to put it in his hand. I made an appointment to sit and explain it to him. Because, folks, when you put things in their hand, they have a tendency not to look at it. And I want to make sure this time that he looks at it, because next year I don't want him to come back and say, oh, my goodness, I'm surprised it got cold. I didn't know, because that's what they do. So please go to John's website. Read the information that's there. It is incredible, thorough, factual, and something that we must be beyond concerned of. We really have to pay of utmost attention to this, because at this point, our survival depends on it. We have no choice. This is going to happen, and it is very, it is impossible. There's no stop. You can't push the stop button. We can't hit the rewind button. We can't do any of that. This is the natural cycle of the earth and the sun, and we just have to figure out the way to manage it. And that's what our government should be doing, helping us manage what's coming, especially when we know what's coming. One of the things that John has done, which I find is fascinating, John, is that you are now able to predict some of the earthquakes. Because earthquakes and tornadoes, to me, are more dangerous than hurricanes and even volcanoes, because you never really don't have a lot of time to prepare for an earthquake. It doesn't say, I'm going to be coming in 3 hours in this direction, and then we can plot a course for it. Earthquakes don't happen that way. They just happen. Except you found something. What is it that you found?
Because of the success I've had in climate prediction, back in September of 2011, a group of the world's leading earthquake experts came to me and said, we think we know how to predict our largest earthquakes, and we want you to bring us all together into a company and then make it happen. I was not aware of this group. They came to me, and I looked at what they were doing, and I said, wow, these guys really can predict earthquakes, at least to a high enough degree that we ought to look at this more closely. So once I had done that, I realized what they really needed was a forum and a format and a company to bring them all together and properly integrate their separate individual techniques into an overall system. Once we did that, I realized that sure enough, we could in fact predict our largest earthquakes by making all their signals work together instead of working independently. We conducted a test program that ended in December of 2012. We actually formed the company in February, the International Earthquake and Volcano Prediction Center. We ended our test program in December 12, having properly predicted three major earthquake events, our first three, in fact. And at that point, I decided there's no point in us letting more people die unnecessarily. We need to start telling the world we can do this. So we began to notify all the earthquake-prone states and nations that this new technique was available and that they should start taking advantage of it. We now have three major earthquakes on our prediction board, two that are supposed to happen this month and one within the next year or so. But the reality is we now have reached a stage where we know enough about earthquakes, we know enough about the family of signals earthquakes produce before they strike, so that we can, in fact, start doing regular predictions and saving lives.
Oh, that is amazing. I mean, that is incredible damage control. How was your information received by the rest of the countries? Or did they think, because of the UN, that you were on another planet?
I was received very similar to my first forecast for climate change. It's interesting when you look at how our country has approached earthquake prediction. The U.S. Geological Service, of course, is the premier government organization that oversees earthquake science here in our country. Every country that has earthquakes on a regular basis has their own USGS or version of it. But our USGS made a big mistake back in the 80s and early 90s. They thought they could predict a particular earthquake using only one technique. And when it failed, they decided that no one could do it. And therefore, the government policy became that no one can predict earthquakes. And for 30 years now, we have gone along with this barrier of science in the field of geology saying that no one can do it. Therefore, there was no office ever set up to do it. There was no money ever allocated to doing it. And that's why the Europeans, the Russians especially, and the Chinese are way ahead of the United States government in the field of earthquake science, because they have no such barriers. They actually believed way back when that earthquakes could be predicted, and they were correct, but they never had the integrated system that we do at the International Earthquake Center.
Which is a wonderful thing when quality people work together. That's the whole key of all of this, is networking together with other people, because that's what brings the information to the spot that, you know, you can predict this. This is it is amazing to think that, you know, after all of these years, and you're right, because when I was teaching, I remember when I was teaching science, one of the things that we always said was earthquakes, there's no way of predicting them. And I never realized what was behind it, but we were taught that we were told exactly that. You know, you could hear the rumblings of a volcano, but nobody ever knew when an earthquake was going to come. And now, knowing that to this month, John, in the United States or someplace else?
Well, if you go to the International Earthquake and Volcano Prediction Center website, that's IEVPC.org, you'll actually be able to see our current list of predicted sites, when they are going to occur, the magnitude of the earthquake, and where it will occur.
And could you repeat that again?
I-E-V, as in victory, P as in Papa, and C, IEVPC.org.
Well, folks, I would think, don't hang up now. Don't touch that dial. But when we're done, go and take a look at that John's website and be prepared, because that's what is the key to all of this. The key to survival is knowledge and preparation. Because having the knowledge and not sharing it or doing something with it is almost as bad as not knowing. And when you know, not being prepared, well, if you're not going to prepare yourself, then you might as well not know. And what we need to be doing as individuals is preparing for what is coming. And what is coming is going to be cold. So don't throw away those old sweaters and sweatshirts. We never know. Now, you said something very interesting, John. What you were saying was that we could have, we'll have extreme weather. So it would be extremely, it could be extremely hot at a period of time as well. Or is it just going to be cold dip?
Exactly. There are several effects during these cold eras. The first effect is, of course, the overall reduction in the average global temperature. And as we approach these cold eras, what we typically see is we kind of drop sharply into a trough. We stay at the bottom for one or two decades, and then we come out sharply. So it's not like a smooth curve where you can see things gradually happen, and then we gradually get back out into the warm area again. That isn't how it happens. It's more like a U-shaped curve. Drop sharply, stay cold, and come up sharply. The second effect is that we see rapid side-by-side weather patterns where you've got a major cold front that comes in and drives a warm front right up in front of it, giving you very warm temperature. And then all of a sudden you get the very deep cold front that comes in behind it. So we see that effect. And then, of course, you have the effect of large volcanic eruptions putting dust up into the air. Bear in mind, we recently had a very large eruption with Mount Pinatubo in 1991. It caused a 3-year drop in global temperatures. And that wasn't even... that was in no way comparable to the Mount Tambora eruption. So we're looking at a much larger scale during these next cold eras. And because so many people are saying, you know, when do we really see such a strong sign that there's no question that the cold is coming, that could happen fairly soon. It will only take a very small variation in the cold temperature range of winter, either on the spring planting or in the fall harvest, for us to see some real damage. We've had a very difficult spring planting already up north where the wheat, soybeans, and corn are grown, and we haven't yet got the final figures in, but I suspect we've already had some early planting cold damage up there. But when the first major cold crop damage occurs, then people will start to take notice.
Isn't that sad that we have to wait for major damage before we take notice? And we already experienced what you're saying. We have experienced it up here in North Florida. We were growing blueberries, and the blueberries were chugging along, blueberrying and getting to be beautiful, and the flowers were great, and all of a sudden we had a 2-week of it got really cold. And a couple of those nights, it went below 32. And the blueberry crop, not only ours, but the rest of the farmers who had actual blueberry farms, I will imagine that there's going to be a shortage of blueberries out of the Florida Panhandle area this coming blueberry season, which, of course, will then drive the price up. And this is not being driven up because this is something that the farmers did on purpose. This was a weather event exactly like what John was describing. We had a rather cool spring, and it didn't start getting hot until now. But from what you're describing, I'm envisioning a trend line going down with some peaks and valleys, but sloping downward instead of sloping upward.
Exactly. And one of the things that we have tried to do in our global climate report is bring these trend lines out. For example, we cover 24 different global climate parameters in our global climate status report. And this really gets specific so people can see this data and see the charts that we put together and say, aha, this really shows me things are cooling or warming or whatever. And in fact, of the 24 global climate parameters, 20 now show global cooling is in place. Only 3 are still showing a warming trend and 1 is neutral. So that's an overwhelming scientific assessment that the planet is in fact going into global cooling in a very big way and fairly rapidly.
Okay, so where do you think that the, you're saying a couple of degrees, overall what do you think we will be losing?
The planet will see, in our opinion, a 1.5 degrees centigrade average temperature drop worldwide. That may not seem like a lot, but that makes the difference between a little ice age and what we're in right now. I don't think we're going to see a little ice age like we did from 1600 to 1745 when the Thames River in England froze over and the Baltic Sea froze over and New York Harbor froze over. You could actually walk between the islands of New York on the water. You didn't need a ferry to get you around back then. But
wow.
The cold, I don't think, will be that bad. At least we don't think so yet. But certainly it will be as bad as it was back in the early 1800s. And that was bad enough. We had thousands of Americans who froze to death and starved to death during that period. And by the way, that was a period when most people were still living on farms, not in the cities now, where people are so dependent on the government and commercial food distributors to get food to their table every day.
And folks, there's only 3 days of food in a supermarket. 3 days. Now think of all the millions of people living in the cities with 3 days of food and crop failure. This is not pleasant if you're not prepared. And this is a huge message that we have to carry to anybody that will listen. Any of our elected officials, I would imagine it would be easier to work within your local community than it would be to try to convince your federal representative. I can't imagine that we will all try, but I doubt if we're going to have a lot of kumbayas and you're right and thank goodness you told us kind of thing. That's not going to happen, especially after Senator Inhofe wrote a book that everybody refuses in Washington to even acknowledge. So he's about the only one that really gets it. I think he really understands it. I cannot imagine any of the other legislators taking this on. So therefore, your local community and your local, your home area is what you really need to be paying attention to. So what can we do, John? What would you suggest?
Well, this is such a good point you're bringing up, and I want to reemphasize what you're saying. And I say that in my book, Cold Sun. But basically, we should not believe that anyone at state and federal level will come to our aid once the crops start to fail. We will enter a period, and it will probably surprise a lot of people how quickly this cold damage comes in to the crops. But we'll enter a period fairly rapidly, and people will get shocked about how rapid, but all of a sudden we're going to hear that the wheat crop has been damaged severely and lost 30, 40, 50% of it with one planting. And then you're going to find that we won't have a lot of bread on the shelf, and that McDonald's and Burger King and all the fast food joints are going to announce some form of rationing. In fact, in my opinion, if you look at this next cold era being simply a repeat of the last cold era, we should fully expect that the U.S. and Canada's leaders will have to stop all foreign food exports, because we simply will not have enough food for our own people.
That is staggering, folks. That is where, this is where we're headed now. Let's be real. Government is lying. We've seen that in many, many, many different policies. And the big one to me is this one, because they're playing with our food. They're playing with our food source, and they are on a crash course to depopulate the planet, which is what they say on a continual basis. And nothing would fit more into their programming than telling us that it's going to get warm when they in fact know that it's going to get cold. This is extremely serious. What would you suggest to people living in the North? Growing things inside in their homes? Would that?
Well, I think there's some obvious things that everyone should be doing. And practical sense takes over here. When you realize that we won't have enough food to eat like we've been used to doing, then we're going to have to change our lifestyle. What does that mean? Well, it may mean giving up wheat-related products and corn-related products and soybean-related products like we've done in the past. That may sound extreme, but it's called the Atkins diet for a lot of families.
I was just going to say that sounds very much like the Atkins diet.
Well, that's basically what it is. You give up wheat products, and there are a lot of books on the market that say wheat's not good for you anyway. But exactly. And as we all know, corn and high fructose corn syrup that's in so many products has a lot of ill effects as well. And then you have the genetically modified corn problems that have caused the Europeans in some countries to stop importing corn completely that comes from the United States as genetically modified. Now, that's a separate issue, but if you combine loss of corn crops from the cold and restrictions on use of GMO crops, then you see we've got two barrels of a shotgun here on the corn issue and corn shortages once this cold climate hits. So
also,
again,
you know what else? I just thought of something, John. All of the ethanol. That's
exactly
the same problem.
Exactly, and that's one of the things I notified our governor of. Fortunately, we've gotten off of the corn ethanol standard. Finally, the legislature did something right about that issue. But it's still going to take a long time before we get 100% gasoline back in the system. But we see many ill effects hitting at the same time during this cold era. And when the cold starts damaging corn crops, we're going to end up with a fuel shortage nationwide unless we can figure out a plan in the meantime. But I will tell you, I've spoken with the agricultural conglomerates, I've spoken with the energy companies. Not one of them is addressing the new cold climate era. They're all still following the man-made global warming models, even though they're all wrong and have been routinely wrong. And they fail to follow models and cycles dealing with the sun that are over 90% accurate consistently in predicting climate change. So we're not going to get a lot of help from our government, certainly. So everyone needs to practically look at what would happen if all of a sudden we did lose 30, 40, 50% of our corn and wheat crops. How would you react when the store shelves are bare? How do you think your neighbors would react? And in a very practical sense, you need to do things like have at least a one-year food supply on hand at all times, don't be dependent on your neighbors, and certainly don't be dependent on the government once these food shortages begin.
Okay, now would you recommend something like the food storage of the freeze-dried food that would probably last for quite some time?
Yes, of course.
That's
one of the best products,
folks,
on the market. But if you do nothing
more...
Not
a commercial for freeze-dried food, but what would you suggest?
I don't have any stock in any freeze-dried food company, I'll tell you that. Certainly the freeze-dried foods have a very long shelf life, so you can buy them and set them aside for 10, 15, 20 years and not have to worry about them. But it's very difficult to get that product now. So many people have been preparing for catastrophic events, totally unrelated to the cold era, by the way, so that they've already been buying up a lot of the food stocks that are freeze-dried and so forth. But if you can get it, it's a great product to have. But if you do nothing more than go to your local grocery store and find products that have long shelf lives, 2, 3, 5 years out,
mm-hmm.
that's better than nothing at all. And you can cycle through that as time goes by so that you always have a one-year stock and eat from that stock as these products reach their expiration date.
Right, that's important, folks. You have to, if you're going to do the cans and the dried food, the rice and beans and things like that, the cereals, make sure that you label everything and rotate them, because nothing is worse than opening up something that you think you're going to be having when you're hungry and finding out that it's been spoiled for whatever reason. So pay attention and label and keep records of some of the food that you have, especially if you're storing it in closets that you're not going to be reaching for on a continual basis. Make sure that you pay attention to the expiration dates. Water, I don't imagine, would be as rough of a thing. But that's not true either, because the pipes would freeze.
Well, I'm not concerned about the water, because we can anticipate when those very severe events would happen. But here in Florida, I don't think we're going to see that problem, because most of our water is from the aquifer, which will not be freezing over. But up north, it could be a problem. There's also a good practical financial reason for having a one-year food supply on hand. Food prices, by anyone's measure, are going to go up and continue to go up at a rapid pace. So if you want to save some money, go buy your one-year food supply now over the next few months, and recognize you're going to save money by buying the same product a year or two or three from now.
Right, and you can always cycle. You could always, you know, have your meal and take something that you purchased 6 or 8 months ago and then just add a new one to it, so you're continually recycling and supplementing, which is a way to keep the food prices down. And don't just worry about buying food. Buy paper products also, because ice and snow is not fun to be out in the street trying to go buy toilet paper or paper towels. So it's not a bad idea to stock up on other items also, because during ice and snow, you may not want to go outside. You know, it's not so much fun walking around in a blizzard if it's below zero, and you're not going to find anything open. So that's going to be a problem also. So it's not just a matter of preparing food. It's a matter of preparing for a disaster. Pretend that you are in a disaster, and if you can't figure out what you need to survive, then as a suggestion, shut the lights and the electricity off in your house for a weekend and see what you need. And then you'll figure it out real fast. And when you figure out what it is that you need, be prepared and start buying little, as John said, little by little by little. And pretty soon, within a short period of time, you'll have enough food to have a year's supply of food. And the other thing that bothers me too, John, is don't be so vocal about what you're doing. because it's different with your family that you know. But if you have food and your neighbor doesn't, people do horrible things when they're hungry. And that's a given. That's a known fact. People do horrible things when they're starving. And the last thing in the world that you want to do is be the target of somebody who's hungry. And I am very concerned about that part, because as it gets colder up north and food becomes more and more scarce, where do you think the people are going to go to? Those that can will be moving south. So these are things that we should be considering for protection and preservation. Because the crowd that we're dealing with, they have no feeling for human life. They do not feel the need to protect human life at all. As a matter of fact, they would be much happier if there were a lot less of us. So them helping us is not going to be an acceptable answer. This is something that we are going to have to prepare and be prepared on our own. John, I wrote a book, and the book is called Cold Sun, and that can be purchased on his website. And it is a fascinating book that is not a difficult read. Even though John is a scientist, he wrote it like real people could read it, which was good. It is a great book, and he talks about the danger of the sun hibernating. Now, what does that mean exactly?
Well, again, the sun goes into these hibernations on a regular basis. It really is a very small reduction in the energy output of the sun, but it's enough to make a complete difference between whether we're warm and whether we're in a little ice age and trying to figure out where we're going to get our food next week. If you look at the sun's total solar irradiance, it only varies by a very small amount, something like the difference between 1,366 watts per meter squared and 1,360 watts per meter squared. Very small difference, but it makes such a total difference here on the planet. So this hibernation of the sun is basically a small energy reduction on the sun's part.
And one of the things that I just thought of when you were saying that is to go and take a look at the agricultural maps and start the America is divided up into sections, and each of those sections has a number, and each of those numbers has a list of the crops that will grow in that particular area. Some crops can withstand cold, some cannot. So you certainly would not want to plant banana trees right now if you were in Florida, because chances are that would not be a worthwhile crop. They're very affected by the heat. They love the heat, and they are not happy when it's cold. So you have to also, if you have property and planting is what you want to do, then pay attention to the types of plants that you would be planting. I know one of the things that we did was we planted apple trees, and we have some apple trees that are warm weather, and we have some apple trees like Macintosh, which I never thought I'd have in Florida, that are cold weather. Now, they won't fruit right now, but when it gets cold, they will. So there's a lot of things that you have to pay attention to if growing food is one of the things that you want to do. And I would also suggest that you put the food or leave the crops, the plants, leave them in the buckets, because if it gets cold and you can move them inside, it makes it a lot better than trying to figure out how you're going to keep your field warm. So it's not as important to think of everybody else. What you want to do is think of you and your family, and what do you need to protect them. And unfortunately, the society that we live in today, many people are not going to believe what you're saying. They go right back to the cold, they go right back to the warmth because it's comforting coming from the government, and that's where their heads are. So unfortunately, we're not going to be able to save everybody. It just works out that way. You can only save people that want to be saved. So it's not your job to do that. It is your job to pay attention to you and your immediate family. That's what's important. Those are the people who are important. And the rest of the people, if they want to pay attention, that's great. And if they don't, there is not anything that we can do about it. John, I went to a, I did a seminar this past weekend in Georgia, and I was talking about you, and I was talking about your prediction, you know, what you were saying and how true it was and the lies of the government. And a woman came over to me after, and she said she was at one of your seminars, and it was wonderful. And by the way, folks, John will travel and will be happy to speak to any group that wants him to come. Just contact him through his website, and he'll be happy to make arrangements with you to come and see you and talk to your group. But this woman came over and she said, you know, we went to a meeting that John Casey had been speaking, and I went with my grandson, and after we left, we were driving home, and my grandson said to me, Grandma, what do I do? They're not telling me this in school. Are you sure John is telling the truth? Isn't that amazing?
That sure grabs you when you hear a child say that, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It really does, because this child is growing up with a lack of science understanding. And it's so important to understand the way things work and how things interplay with one another. This is what makes the world go, you know, what makes the world work. And when you take away those tools from kids, and all you're doing is providing them with an app for something that is irrelevant, there's no place for them to go to learn the truth. And that's why people like John, who have dedicated himself to learning and telling the truth, are so important. So we know firsthand that you're going to have a tough time because the atmosphere of the science community is not, well, actually, aren't they changing, John? Let me rephrase that.
Aren't more and more scientists changing? In fact, when I first began this, there was absolutely no one on the national scene that was saying what I was saying. It was a very lonely time. But, yes, since then, other scientists are now deciding it's okay to come forward and repeat what I've been saying all these years. Things are changing, and, of course, several bad winters and the declining global temperature has helped change some people's minds about these UN climate reports and these faulty predictions of continuous global warming. So, yes, fortunately, things are changing. The problem we have, of course, is we've got our government and many governments still telling us that the world is warming, which is simply not true, and they are still doing nothing to prepare us and the rest of the world for the coming cold era. Getting back to one of your questions, when I do speak, people always come up and say, what should I do? How should I prepare? And my answer is, the first thing is get informed. You can get informed by going on the internet, doing search routines on climate change, cold era, global cooling, anything that will tell you about the leading trends and the leading researchers and what's available out there. Certainly, we have been leading the effort here in the United States. You can go to our website, find a great deal of information that gives you all the facts, all the charts, all the data in a digestible format. You're not reading a science textbook when you go to our website. You're reading the basic information you need to know to make a proper decision. You can get the book Cold Sun. You can get our global climate reports. And, oh, by the way, the electronic book, the e-book for Cold Sun, is now available. And instead of paying $25 for the hardcover book. You only have to pay $7.95 to get that now. You can start reading it in just a few minutes by going to polesun.net, the website, or the Space and Science website, which has it there as well. So get informed is step number one. And step number two is start taking action. Start preparing, because your
right.
government will not be there for you.
Nope. And this is, and preparation, folks, is not just food. Think cold. What would you do if there was no heat in your house? Now, why am I saying that? Because much of the coal generation plants, the mines, are being shut down. There have been a lack of permits going out for oil fields, for oil wells. We may hit a spot when we can't import. Maybe, who knows, maybe the oceans will be, oh my goodness, frozen, or icebergs or something that would prohibit, that could stop fuel coming to our country. And because of the lack of resolve of this president, the stubborn politicking and the not paying attention to the truth of the science is going to put us in harm's way. And I believe that they are doing that on purpose, and there isn't anything in the world that could make me change my mind. But knowing that, that's not going to help. What we have to do is be ahead of the curve and be prepared. Because if what I'm saying is true and they know, I will bet you that they're prepared. Because they are anticipating that we are not prepared. And as a result, they will fulfill their prophecy of eliminating 90% of the planet, which they say over and over and over again. All you have to do is read their words. And Ted Turner is one of the biggest spokespeople for bringing the planet down to 500 million to a billion people. He says that on a continual basis. So they tell you what they think. And the fact that they are not telling the truth about the climate so that we will not be prepared shows me by their actions that they know about this and that they're doing this on purpose. Because if they were not, why would you not prepare for something else if you thought that it might be coming? Are you not better off preparing and erring on the side of caution, which is what we have always been taught? Or are you ignoring the opposition because of a political motivation? And I believe that they are lying because of a political motivation with an underlying goal to depopulate the planet. And there isn't anything that I have read to the contrary that would make me think otherwise. So we have to be ahead of the government, because the government is not going to be there for us when we need them. And all you have to do is start looking around and seeing what's happening in the climate, what's happening with the people, and listen to their words, and then look at their actions. And if you can get a couple of legislators to believe what we're saying, more power to you. That would be wonderful, because then you will have a working crew, but don't count on it. Look in your hometown, look on your own block, and look in your own family, and make sure that you are cared for in all ways. Food is not just the only thing. Warmth is going to be an amazing thing. I remember last year the Czechoslovakian president said all of the billions of dollars that they spent on all of these renewable fuels did not keep any of his population warm during the ice-cold winter that they had, and his people were dying. And this came straight from the Czechoslovakian president. So people know, they just don't want us to know. And that's what we have to be prepared for. So, John, is there anything else that we have left out that you can share that we would need to know.
Well, I think you've done a wonderful job hitting all the key points, and I very much appreciate you having me on your show tonight. It's always a pleasure, and I just hope that people understand how much good you're doing by getting these important subjects out in front of people so they are not put in harm's way, so they are prepared for whatever happens.
Okay, our shows are podcast. You can see them. You can see them. You can't see them, folks. Sorry about that. You can hear them. On, they are podcast, and the podcast is on blogtalkradio.com, American Statesman, and you'll look for American Freedom Watch Radio, and there will be a podcast. So I will also send it out in our newsletter. I will send out the information on the earthquakes that John was talking about with that website. And, of course, in every newsletter I send out John's email and his press releases in hopes that you will forward them to your local newspapers. Don't be upset if they don't print them. Put them in the opinion section. Make them an opinion instead of a fact, and you might have a chance of getting it printed, because you can take the truth and have an opinion that it's right, and there's nothing wrong with doing that. And it's easier sometimes to get things in op-ed than it is to try to get it as a news article or as a press release. So maybe a question. Hey, here's a scientific press release that I came across that gives a total different picture. What is this all about, and why is our government not exploring another option? And if we ask questions like that, then maybe we will be fortunate enough that someone will listen. But if not, you listen and be prepared and get prepared. Keep your car. I always tell everybody, make sure your car is working great and make sure that you always have at least a half a tank of gas. That won't make any difference in a blizzard. But if your car is always up to speed, then you will do a lot better than leaving things for last minute. We don't have a chance to do that anymore. I don't think where do you think you think that we're going to see a turn in the next 2 to 3 years?
Well, if you look at the past performance of these cycles, the bottom year will be 2031, which means the 2020s will be the worst for us as we drop quickly down into it. So we have only a few years, and certainly no more than 7 years before some of the worst cold hits us. The number 7 years is somewhat biblical, but that's what the numbers are showing right now. But in the meantime, just as we have seen already this winter, we've had a very difficult spring planting. We haven't heard the ill effects of that yet. The media is keeping a lid on it. But we're going to start seeing crop damage fairly quick before the worst of it hits. So word to the wise, be prepared, get informed, and don't expect your government to come to your aid on this one.
You're absolutely right. Remember, chance favors the prepared mind. And that's what we have to do. We have to be prepared. Well, I want to thank you so much, John, for joining me tonight. And once again, this is John Casey, and his websites are coldsun.net and spaceandscience.net. Go to his website, find the press release, make a donation if you can. It's very important that we have real scientists who are not dependent upon a grant so that they will report what the government wants them to report rather than reporting the truth. So thank you, John, and your scientists for bringing us all of this information and helping us prepare. And you know, we will do whatever we can to get the message out, because this is serious, folks. Yes, spying is serious. Yes, war is serious. But not eating and starving is very serious. So let's pay attention to what we have to face. And unfortunately, we've added another measure to something we've got to prepare for. Thank you, John, for joining me tonight. And this is Karen Schoen, your host. You are listening to American Freedom Watch. Excuse me, I'm sorry. American Freedom Watch Radio, and we are brought to you live on blogtalkradio.com, American Statesman, and on redstatetalkradio.com. Please join us. Thank you for spending your evening with us. We appreciate all of you. God bless you all. God bless America. And remember, victory is our only option. Thank you. See you again next week.